We're going to Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. And Lord willing, we will finish the book of Ecclesiastes next Sunday. Coming to the close of this very practical letter of wisdom and living life in this world, which has its ups and downs, its good days and its bad days. And God's intention is we learn, or to learn with the wisdom he gives, how to navigate through all kinds of days and get the most out of every day so that our lives fulfill his purpose for us as we walk this earth. Really, chapter 11, verse 1, down through chapter 12, verse 8, form a unit, really, and bring together in a concluding way, Solomon's instructions that are given through the book. We've looked through chapter 11, and you'll note those instructions in the first six verses reminded us that the repeated expression used four times in those six verses, you do not know, reminding us as we walk this earth of our limitations. Only God knows the future. He has planned the future. But we do not know. We do not know for sure what is coming. So wisdom involves wise planning. That will help us avoid some of the pitfalls. He talked about those in chapter 10 of this instruction. Now he reminds them, make wise decisions. In other words, don't put all your eggs in one basket, as we would say. We don't have control over the weather and so on. So make decisions, taking into account that there could be some difficult or bad days ahead. You can't control that, but wisdom will help you make plans so you're not caught off guard or in an unexpected way. You're reminded that God is sovereign in all this. He's the one who's in control. He used in verse 5 the example of the blowing of the wind and of a child formed in the womb and the bones forming. That's the work of God. Then, yeah, life is uncertain, but that should not keep you from making wise decisions. And he moves on to put the two together in verse 8. If a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. God's intention, as we've seen through this letter, constantly reminded, he intends us to enjoy life. God created Adam and Eve, put them on the earth he had created in the beautiful garden he had made with the intention they lived their lives enjoying God and his creation. Now, sin came into the picture, and that has brought bad days and unpleasant experiences. So he said, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. Make every day count, as we've seen through Ecclesiastes. But remember, and that word remember we're going to see as we start chapter 12. It's used in the Hebrew Old Testament. It doesn't mean just reminisce, but it means call to mind with the intent of acting on what you know. You've learned from your experiences, as Solomon talked about through this letter. As he put things to the test, as he tried things, he learned and developed wisdom. So remember that there will be dark days, and they will be many. Even as God's people, we enjoy good times, we enjoy bad times. Sin has brought the negative in, as we would say it. The pain, the suffering, the unpleasantness. But it hasn't wiped out all the joy that God intended for us when he created us. So you have to keep your eyes open as you navigate this life. Enjoy life, but remember there will be dark days, and there will be many. And that's where we're going in chapter 12. He's going to bring us to the events that often precede death, old age, and the dark days that can come with the declining years that culminate in our death. But remember the end of verse 8. Everything to come is futility. It is brevity. It is a breath. The good days, the bad days. So don't miss the joy of enjoying the days, because they will be brief. And when you're going through the dark days, don't despair. They too will be brief. Because it's a characteristic of this life that everything associated with it, including life itself, is but a breath. We would say it in more current language, here today, gone tomorrow. The passing of life. And that's where he's going to take us as we come into chapter 12. He picks up in chapter 11, verse 9, with what will lead into chapter 12 directly, when he says, "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood. Let your heart be pleasant during your days. Follow the impulses of your heart, the desires of your eyes. Yet know God will bring you into judgment for all these things." Enjoy life. Start young. And remember, you start a life of wisdom when you come to recognize God, who He is, and your need for Him as your God. His salvation, the beginning of wisdom, of knowledge, is the fear of the Lord. Proverbs chapter 1, Proverbs chapter 2. You begin by establishing a right relationship with the Lord. And then you move on in building your life. And the sooner you start, the better. Now, some of you did not come to know Christ till later in life. And you pick up in your walk with the Lord there. And that's part of His plan for you. I remember sharing the gospel with a very elderly woman. I think she was 92, in a nursing home that I was asked to visit her when I was a pastor in my former pastorate. And I went in and shared the gospel with her, and the Lord had prepared her heart. And she trusted the Lord right there. Prayed, "Oh, Lord, I'm a sinner." When she got done praying, she said to me, "You have to tell people not to wait until they're 90 to trust the Lord." I never forgot that, because that's good advice. That's Solomon's advice. Rejoice, young man, in your childhood. Start young. Follow your desires. You know, don't get paralyzed. "Well, I don't know if I can." This is an interest and desire you have. Now, it's not a hedonistic or a selfish pursuit. Because remember, God will bring you into judgment for all these things. So it's a life lived with His wisdom. But don't be afraid to move on and take advantage of the day, because every day that goes by is a day that won't come back. So remove grief and anger from your heart. Put away pain from your body. You know, don't dwell on these things. So yesterday was a bad day. Yesterday was a day. Let it go. You ruin today and miss the joy of today because you're stuck in yesterday or last week. And some people have a lifetime of past they're stuck in. And the reminder, why? Because youth is brief. Childhood and the prime of life are but a breath. Same word is translated futility at the end of verse 8, remember. So we start chapter 12, and what will he do? He'll pick up, remember. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. So you see how he's picked up what he was talking about in verses 9 and 10 specifically. The days of youth. Being a young person, a young adult, and those years of life where you have the greatest energy and so on. Don't waste them. Use them wisely. And interesting, rejoice in them. But remember your Creator. Let me pick up three key words here. We noted the three key expressions in the first six verses of chapter 11. You do not know. Now in verses 1 to 6 of chapter 12, three times he will use the word before. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. Verse 2, before the sun and the light and so on are darkened. Down in verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is broken and so on. Don't wait until trouble, difficulty, and then walk with wisdom, and you'll be prepared for those days. Establish a life patterned after walking with the Lord. And that's where he picks up with chapter 12, verse 1. I have to say one more thing that I think is interesting with Solomon. In Hebrew, the first seven verses are all one long sentence. And one commentator noted, if you read this one long sentence encompassing verses 1 to 7, if you read it aloud, you would be out of breath by the end. That's just like Solomon, because what's his next statement in verse 8? Breath of breaths, all is a breath. So even as you read this overview of life from youth to old age and death, if you read it out loud, you're out of breath and you're out of life. That's what life is like. It is a passing breath. Don't miss any day. Don't waste the days. Get started walking with the Lord early. So chapter 12, verse 1, remember. There's that word I talked about that was up in verse 8 of chapter 11. In Hebrew, that meant you bring it to mind so you can act upon it. You've been learning and you just call these things to mind and you remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Your Creator takes it back to Genesis 1 and 2. Remember, these are Jews that Solomon is writing to. I don't know, some evangelical commentators said that he uses the word Creator here because he's not writing to Jews, or he would have used the word Yahweh, which is the covenant name of God with Israel. So that he's just writing to people generally. That's not true of any of the Old Testament. These are the oracles of God given to the Jews. It's one of the special, unique blessings they have. He's telling these Jews that would take them back to Genesis, the opening chapters in their Bible, chapters 1 and 2 as we have it. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. You want to start out early with your focus on God. Remember, the beginning of knowledge and wisdom is the fear of the Lord. He's the Creator. He made you. He knows you. We have that song, He Knows My Name. He knows everything about you. He's the one who created you. He's the one to be honored and obeyed. And He's the one who can direct your life exactly as it should be. So you make your decisions and you act in light of He is my Creator. He's my God. Remember, the Creator created Adam and Eve to walk with Him in the garden in the cool of the evening. So we're going back there now for the spiritual relationship you must have. And the earlier you start that, that's why, you know, we begin early and put the children, the young people in classes with people that care about them, that are committed to teaching the Word to them, build it into their young lives. Pray for them so that they will come to know the Creator as their Savior, that the God they love and serve, and they can walk with wisdom beginning at a very early age. It's God's will that's being done under the sun. So people walking apart from the will of God, who have not entered into that relationship with Him, are constantly banging their head against the wall. It's just life. He's sovereign. He knows you. Come back to chapter 3. We don't have time to go through all that's in this book, but look in chapter 3, verse 1. There is an appointed time for everything, a time for every event under heaven. That's wisdom. I realize God is sovereign. He's in control. I want to bring that back to my mind. That gives me stability. And I do that in the best of times, so when the worst of times come, I'm reminded. I reflect, yes, God, you're in control. You come down to verse 11 of chapter 3. He has made everything appropriate in its time. At the end of the verse, this is the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. He is the Creator. He is sovereign. Verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. The end of verse 14, God has so worked that men should fear him. I recognize who he is. I submit to who he is. I bow before him. I want to take wisdom from him. Come over to chapter 7, verse 13. Consider the work of God, for who is able to straighten what he has bent? In the day of prosperity, be happy. This is where we are. As he draws this to a conclusion in chapter 12. But in the day of adversity, consider, God has made the one as well as the other, so man will not discover what is after him. I realize this is the life God has created for me. This is the day he has appointed for me to live this day with his wisdom, to honor him. But you know, that doesn't mean I get paralyzed. I don't know what to do. I'm not sure if this is the will of God or that's. And sometimes, you know, we want to have thought put into it, but we get paralyzed by our thought. We analyze it to death. Proceed. He said, follow your desires, your interests. God made you. Now, that's within the confines of recognizing his sovereignty over my life, and I will give an account of him for the days of my life. But don't let these days go by. I'm accountable for this day. Well, I wasted it. Start with the wisdom. Build it early. Build it as consistently as you can. Although there's other passages, but come back to chapter 12. As you get to the closing part of a book of instruction like this, there are many things you could go back and review because he is building on some of those things again and again. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. With the passing of the days of your life, and you move on from youth, and pretty soon the older years come, and they can be more difficult. And things can happen along the way that bring added difficulty. And there'll be many of those kind of difficult, dark days. But, you know, they tend to pile up as you get toward the end of your life. And that's where he's taking us. So you begin to walk with your Creator and in submission and obedience to him with that wisdom day by day, and the earlier the better. That's what we want to do with our children, right? Even as we train them, we want them to learn early and avoid some of the pitfalls and be prepared to handle some of the pressures of life. Here, remember, before the evil days come, the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. There'll come times as the physical problems pile up toward the end of our life that we get to the point, you know, it's hard to appreciate these days. There are days like verse 2, which is saying the same thing. Before, there's our word before again. You know, sometimes we wait until we're in trouble and dark days are here, and then we want to try to figure out what to do. You know, wisdom is you develop the pattern of life in walking in fellowship with the Lord and sensitivity to his will, using his wisdom, that you move into those dark days, and that doesn't mean they're not dark days. I want to say something as we move into this. God intends us, even as his people, as we walk this earth, to feel the weight of the consequences of sin and the seriousness of sin. So we experience that in our everyday life, even as the unbeliever does. And that includes our physical death. We'll get to talk about that. But sometimes we as believers think, well, we ought to minimize. They're real. God intends us to recognize that. Remember, he wrote through Paul in Romans 8, our body groans. In this physical body, we groan. And the whole creation groans. So Paul was a groaner. Believers are groaners. The whole creation groans. Why? The curse of sin has not been lifted. Now the penalty for us has been lifted. The power has been broken. These things, we don't minimize it. But the fact is, God still has us here. And he's instructing us. It's an intention. We're going to experience death if Jesus Christ does not come. I have no friendship with death. Death to this day is an enemy, not a friend. Why? By one man, sin came into the world, and death by sin. I have no friendship with sin. Why would I have friendship with death? Without sin, there'd be no death. Sometimes Christians get the idea we shouldn't feel sad. Death is an enemy. Even when one who loves the Lord, who I'm close to, dies, I wish it didn't happen. I know where they're going, but there's pain in death. God's not taking that out. He told the Thessalonians, we don't grieve as those who have no hope. He doesn't say we don't grieve, but we're not hopeless in our grief. So the reality of life is what he is bringing out here. So what verse 2 says, before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened. Clouds return after the sun. He's talking about those dark days. We would talk about them as he has talked about them, and they will be many. In chapter 11, verse 8, enjoy all the days, but remember the days of darkness, they will be many. But everything that comes is brief. It's about a breath. So what happens here, the sun, the light, the moon, the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the sun. But the sun's gone. And you know, weeping endures for the night, joy comes in the morning. But as I walk this life, you get toward the close of life and the troublesome closing time. You know, it seems it's one cloudy day after another. It's not like, oh, here. So Solomon has this very beautiful, picturesque way to draw us through the declining years of life. It reminds me of the book of Song of Solomon, where in a very picturesque, poetic way, he depicts the erotic aspect of marriage life. My last hour class, I said the erratic aspect of marriage life, but I mean erotic. The sensual, sexual time. And he does it in such a picturesque, beautiful way. That's what he does here with death. He takes and he pictures it as almost like an old house and things associated with it falling down. I mean, you ride through the country and you'll see this old house and the color is dilapidated, the roof's falling in. And they say, well, that was probably quite a place in its day. That's sort of the picture you're going to get. You're going to leave youth now. And this helps remind us it's passing, it's a breath. Take advantage of every day before the dark days come. And what are they like? So he begins that picture. In the day when the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop. And each of these have something to say. The watchmen of the house tremble. I think he's talking here about our arms and our hands. They're the watchmen of the house, and they're the sense that you do everything with. You go to work, you use your hands. Even if you just type all day, they would plant. Then you make food with them and you bring the food to your mouth. They're like the watchmen. They're out front, so to speak. That's the picture. What happens? The watchmen of the house tremble. I've gathered a number of old books from 1700s, 1800s, and so on. And I like to just delve into reading some of them. And I like it when they've been written in the front. People write their name and you can tell. You know, some of them are with those that pen and ink they would use, and it's very flowing. You can tell that's a person somewhat in the prime of life who wrote there. And some of them is very shaky, and you say, that person must have been quite old. And it is today. And you know, often we get the shakes as we get older. It gets harder. Things come in. Now, any of these things can happen at any stage of life because it's characteristic. It brings dark days at all times. But age tends to pile them up and it becomes more characteristic. It's just natural. My dad was an artist. made his living at the steel mill, but on the side, he did artwork. He designed the Christmas card for U.S. Steel that U.S. Steel used it universally. He did that for years. But as he got older, something of that steadiness was gone. Just one of the characteristics of life. And you'll note on some of these things, as we've gotten, and in God's grace, we live in a day where we have things that help, you know, can push back the impact of some of them. But all it does is pile up at the end because death is coming in and we're not making any progress. In one sense, because 70 years, and if you get to 80, these things will become more evident. We're about where the psalmist was, and he wrote 70, maybe 80. But I'm glad for the day in which we live and the help we have. So the watchmen of the house tremble. The mighty men stoop. And I think this is probably referring to the legs, the back. You know, I'm pretending now. It's just the way we get. You can feel it coming. You know, you watch the younger people, they come to a flight of steps, they take them two at a time. I'm happy to get the rail and take them one at a time. This is what happens. The mighty men stoop. You know, that's where your strength is, in those legs that you have strength in. That get down, you can get back up. As you get older, you get down, and then you look for something to grab onto to push you up. It's just life at that stage. The grinding ones stand idle because they are few. You just have to read it, but it's so picturesque. It's our teeth. They fall out. Now, we live in a great day. You know, modern dentistry helps us to preserve the teeth we have, and when you lose one, you can get an implant. I often think when I read something like this of George Washington and reading how much trouble he had, and this happened at a younger age, with his wooden false teeth. Now, how would you like to try to get by and around and have dinner with your wooden false teeth? I can't even imagine it. But you lost your teeth. You didn't have the advances we have and the care that we have. And some people's teeth are better than others. I don't think Marilyn ever had a cavity. Had her first cavity and she was like 45 or 47. She just had good teeth. I think I started getting cavities when I was 2. I wouldn't have had any teeth. I'd have lost all mine at 30. I'm glad for modern dentistry. And, you know, you get a lot of benefits. Now we have things that deaden it. When I was in grade school, I had to walk myself to the dentist. And my mother would say, now you can tell him that if it's going to be very bad, he can give you Novocaine. Other than that, no. Because they couldn't afford to pay for it regularly. So you go there and blah, 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 blah. It was terrible. Now you go to the dentist, flop back in a comfortable chair. You feel anything? Not a thing. Well, I'm done. Oh, that was great. The old days, they lost their teeth. So we live in a day, some of these things are retarded. All that means is you'll die with better teeth. Do you ever go to a coffin and somebody's got a big smile on their face? No, I mean, it doesn't matter. All right, the grinding ones stand idle because they're few. You just don't have enough teeth. All right. Those who look through the windows grow dim. There's the windows, our eyes, what happens with age. And again, we live in a great day. You can thank the Lord for it. You can have cataract surgery. You know, in Solomon's day, they didn't have cataract surgery. You know what happened? You just progressively lost your sight. Remember Eli sitting on the stoop? His eyes were set. He was elderly. You know, what do? You just lost your sight. And other eye afflictions that of one kind or another that now we can. So again, some of it can't. Still, people can still lose their sight. But by and large, it's nothing like would have been. But it is a characteristic of getting old. Aren't you glad you came? Something to look forward to. The doors on the street are shut, as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And this verse just shows something of Solomon's ability and insight and put things together. The doors on the street are shut. The sound of the grinding mill is low. You don't hear what's going on. It's our ears. You know, you don't hear like you used to hear. What would you say? Would you repeat that? We can lose our hearing. And then he says on the other, where he puts the balance, one will arise at the sound of a bird. And it can be a characteristic of old age. Not that I know, but I'm married to an elderly woman. You don't hear well. And she's got good hearing. I'm the one with bad hearing. But you know, little sounds wake you up. You know, you can't make sense of a conversation, but you try to sleep and the littlest thing seems to wake you up. And it says it goes together with old age, and the way Solomon puts that in there, that you can't hear what's going on outside, but a little sound wakes you up and you'd like just to be able to sleep through the night. And all the daughters of song will sing softly. Again, you just can't make it out like you did. I had coffee not too long ago with a man I know, doesn't attend church here, but he's even older than I am. So we're in this coffee shop, two old men, both with hearing aids. And he says to me, "You know, I don't feel any older than I was when I was 50. And I said, "Well, if you could have told me that three tones down, but... And he said, "My brain's just as good as it was." And I answer back, because I said, "Well, hey, I think we're getting..." "What'd you say?" So pretty soon, he's telling me, and I'm telling him back, "Yeah, I enjoyed that too. I thought it was good." And he says to me, "Yeah, it was good. I don't feel any older." I said to him, using by name, I said, "Look around this coffee shop. See all these young people sitting here? You think they're looking at these two old men screaming at each other, thinking they just look so young." You know, the reality of it is the reality of it. So you lose some of your hearing. Verse 5. "Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road." In other words, fear multiply. And some of you have had to deal with this with your parents. You notice how when I talk about old people, I talk about them. But, you know, it comes with old age. I remember as I realized I wasn't as young as I was, I used to love to swim. Go to the pool every day, all day. The ritual of summer is go get burnt to a crisp, get these big blisters on you, break them with a needle, clean. And then once you got to, you could endure the sun, do the diving boards and all that. So one time I had kids then, and I'm going to show them what it's like. We were at a lake, and they had like a 25-foot platform. I'm going to show them what old dad can do. I climb up the ladder. That platform takes forever. I get up there. I look down. And it dawned on me, what am I doing up here? This makes no sense. No, I got a choice. My pride can drive me off the end, be a dead idiot, or I can swallow my pride and return the way I came. I had developed a little wisdom. Move off the ladder, I'm coming down. So by then, everybody in the park knew. What happens? You're afraid of things you weren't afraid of. And you go through, they don't adjust well. They're afraid of what's going to happen. What's this? And you try to comfort your elderly parents. You know, that'll be all right. And there won't be a problem. You know, it's hard to settle them down. Things they're afraid of, they weren't before. You drive behind somebody. And they're going 22 and the speed limit's 45. Of course, I'm patient. I have white hair. I look at them and say, "That's nice. I can't wait for a broken line here." But, you know, they're afraid. They're timid about it. You know, it just comes. Might come earlier for some, might come late. You see, these things are starting to build. They're not the same for everyone, but when they all come together, deterioration is building in. The almond tree blossoms. You know what happens when the almond tree blossoms come out? They're white. There's a picture of the almond tree blossoming. As you look around, we have white hair. Just comes with the passing of age. The grasshopper drags itself along. I can see video clips just of that on the internet showing me, here's the state Gil's in. You know, life is more difficult. The things aren't easy. You're more careful. Some old people even fall down steps. You know, you just go along. You know, Solomon has a sense of humor. You got to love the guy. The caperberry is ineffective. You know what the caperberry is? It's the Viagra of the day. It was a sexual stimulant. But you got into the age, it won't work. I'm sitting at my desk laughing. Solomon's got 1,000 women in his harem waiting. The caperberry doesn't work. It's over. So the next statement, man goes to his eternal home. I just love he saved that till the end. Man goes to his eternal home. Mourners walk the street. See what happens? These things build up. So what has he done? He's talked about taking advantage of every stage of life. But the further along we get in life, the penalty for sin is death. We still live under that physical penalty. And these problems of life that we experience along the way, those many dark days, begin to pile up. And they become more difficult to deal with. It's harder. You know, you don't recover as well or as quickly. A young person's running by full speed. They fall down. They roll a couple times. They get up and keep going. When you get older, you're walking slow and you fall down, and it can be a serious thing. It's just things have built up and the body's dying. And God intends us to feel the weight of the consequences of sin. So he doesn't take that away when you become a believer. Not that I bear it in the wrong sense, but thank you, Lord, for your grace that has rescued me. You know, the relief that'll come from this body of death, it's a dying body. We're just at different stages along the way. But that's not a cause of despair, because God put us here for a purpose. Sometimes we think, oh boy, I can't wait till this life's over and go to. Understand, this is God's purpose for each one of us here today. And if we don't do with today what he intends, we will someday stand before him to give an account. Man goes to his eternal home. Now remember what Solomon has been talking about. He's been talking about life under the sun. I don't think he's talking about heaven or those future things. In fact, it was interesting for me to read, because I didn't remember this, probably was taught it in my Hebrew class, but I had forgotten, that this expression, eternal home, Beth Olam, is what Jews to this day call their cemetery, eternal home. In the sense that Solomon has been talking about, it is the end of this physical life. Everything that will be done during my physical life comes to a dead halt when I die. We're put in the grave. That body is no longer useful. It does nothing. You can embalm it and set it in a chair, but it still can't do anything. That's the point. So I think that's what he's talking about. That's where he's gone. We'll see more of that in a moment. Mourners go about in the street. That's the process. So you see, he's focused here. It's all about this life, the brevity of this life. And it comes to an end. And it can often come to an end. Some people die young, younger brother died at 52. He didn't experience some of these declining things, but he couldn't escape death. You can live to be much older, and some people seem to do well into advancing years. But by and large, this is the rule, as the psalmist said, 70 years, maybe 80, but they'll be filled with difficulties. That's what Solomon has laid out. So verse 6, remember him. And you'll note that's in italics, because they've, like they did in verse 5, started a new sentence, since this is one long sentence. So they picked up the remember. from verse 1, the beginning word, repeated here, but before. So this is where he calls us back. He walked you through old age. Now, the best preparation for that is walking wisely in the early days, walking with wisdom each day till you get there. Do that before all options are gone. Because we're at death now. Death has occurred at the end of verse 5. Man goes to his eternal home, the grave, as far as the physical body is concerned, and its activity on this earth under the sun. I know his resurrection's there, but Solomon's not talking about any of that. It's about this life on earth under the sun. Remember him before the silver cord is broken, the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, the wheel of the cistern is crushed. What he uses of each of these things, again, and the things that might be around and associated with a home, and each of them, when they're broken or crushed, they're no longer of use. Each of these four images, I think, picture the body in its death. It's a reminder what? No matter who you are, what you do, take advantage of the days that you have. Because when death comes, your part is over. You will accomplish nothing else. One writer put it picturesquely, you will have taken your last walk, you will have eaten your last dinner, you will have given your last kiss. It's over. All they can do is mourn and weep, those who are left, but they can't bring you back. And as time goes by, as we've seen in Ecclesiastes, they have to get on with their life because you're not coming back. And in some sense, sometimes bringing to the life to an end, it's a relief. You see an elderly parent suffering and, you know, their body's decrepit, their mind is not functioning, and they know the Lord, and you're just anxious for them to go too. But it's still painful to have them go. Now, if they could stay and be in full health, I'd rather have them here. So you see, death is just because the impact of sin has come to the point death is the only real alternative. So that's the picture in those four things. They're all four items useful and valuable in life, but when they're ruined, their usefulness is gone. When they put your body in the grave, your usefulness is gone. Everything you're going to do and accomplish in this life is over. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. You see the beauty of how Solomon has laid this out? He started out in verse 1, remember your creator. Where does that take you back? Genesis 1 and 2. God took the dust of the earth at the beginning of Genesis 2, and he made it into a man. Then out of the side part of the man, he made a woman. And then because of sin, in chapter 3, God pronounced judgment. You were made from the dust, you will return to the dust. So that's what he says, from the dust. Then the dust will return to the earth. Remember your creator. And you go back to those early days. They ought to, reflecting on them, remind us life is short. It's going to end in death. I know the possibility of the Lord's return, but for the most part, up till this day, death is the reality. You'll return to dust. The spirit will return to God who gave it. Now, initial reading this might think, well, the spirit, that probably means we're going to heaven. But I think in the context of what Solomon is talking about, he's talking about your life. The creator who breathed life in you now takes that life back. Because remember, Solomon has only been concerned with life under the sun, life on the earth. When your life is removed, you're dead. So I think he's talking about the word spirit here, ruah. Can sometimes mean breath. You may have that in your margin. The word for spirit is different than the word hevel. That means breath, but it sometimes means spirit. That's a good translation. But I think he's talking about the life that animates the body. Come back to chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. And look at verse 18. I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see they are but beasts. Now, man, as we talked about that, we did this, is different than the animals. But there is a way in which we are alike. For the one fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. That's what he's talking about there. Same spirit in the sense of life. There's no advantage of a man over a beast. All is a breath. And then he uses that word, hevel. But you see the comparison. We're talking about life on the earth. And as far as living on this earth, a dog and a man both die. The beast dies, the man dies. The man dies, his body deteriorates and goes back to dust, and the beast dies and his body deteriorates, and we're alike. Now, you don't want to build your theology of man on just that, but life under the sun is like that. All this is a reminder. If you don't do what you should on each day, your life will be gone and you won't have the opportunity. Why did God put you here? He could have made you a spirit in heaven, but he didn't. He made angels like that. But he created us and put us on this earth, and he expects us to live our days, even though sin is here and shortens those days, live them wisely. So I think it's the same thing he's talking about in verse 21, who knows, the breath of man ascends upward and the breath of the beast ascends downward. As far as life on the earth is concerned, it's the same for both. It's over. And that's what Ecclesiastes has been about. That's where he's brought us to. So you have verse 8, come back to chapter 12. And this wraps up the book. They'll have a conclusion in verses 9 to 14, but the substance of the book brings us to where we began. Breath of breaths, all is but a breath. It's all temporary. It's all brief. It's all passing. It's not all vain or vanity. It's not all meaningless. Every day has a purpose. God has made everything appropriate, beautiful in its time. A time to be born, a time to die. On we went through in chapter 3. This is where we started. Chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, verse 2. The English Bible has it, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Wait a minute. Better to say, breath of breaths, all is but a breath. What's the point? This is a very valuable life you live on this earth. God created us for it. Now, sin has brought the painful, the dark days into life. Sometimes it gets to the point, as Solomon acknowledged early in these instructions, times when I said, I wish I would never have been born, like Job. And remember, we looked at that. But remember, it's all brief. And it's all a part of the appointment of God for us. He's made everything appropriate in his time. He appoints the time. He appoints the events for the time. That means every day is a day I am responsible for. I will be accountable for. And part of that is the commands he's given to rejoice and enjoy every day. So it's interesting. I can be just as much in disobedience to God when I'm complaining about a dark day as when I'm not rejoicing in a good day. I'm to be living this life out under his sovereign control. He created me. He created me to enjoy life. Remember, he created life. He created it to be enjoyed. And the enjoyment is found first in a relationship with him. Something of that enjoyment was broken for Adam and Eve when they sinned. They no longer look forward to walking with God in the cool of the evening, but they run and hide from him. But what a merciful, gracious God he is. He's not only taken all the joy out of living life, he tells us to enjoy it, but live wisely. This is a creation under the curse of sin, and you are still living under that curse, even as a believer. But you can walk in fellowship with him and navigate and maneuver that life with wisdom. Question comes, do you fear the Lord? You talk about this, there's practical advice here that would be good for anyone, but the reality of living a life of wisdom begins with a relationship with the Lord. It doesn't have anything to do with you were just raised in this church. If you've had Christian parents, if you tried to do good, have you ever entered into a relationship with the living God, the creator of all? That happens through faith in the provision he made in Jesus Christ. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, in order that whosoever believes in him would not perish, but have everlasting life. He'll overcome the power of death with life. Right now, when you've come to trust in Christ and entered into that relationship with God, you walk with him under his care. You have his wisdom provided for you, and you navigate life and you experience many of the same things the unbeliever does. You get sick. You have pain of a variety of kinds. Dark days come. But you understand and you live. Lord, I know it's a brief time. And you'll bring me through. Days of joy come. And Lord, I want to enjoy them to the fullest. But I want to remember these will be brief. And that's a good reason to enjoy them. Thank you, Lord, for everything you do. Everything you've prepared for me for every day. May we with wisdom make every day count. Let's pray together. Thank you, Lord, for the riches of your word. You are a God of great grace, great love and mercy, and you are the God of wisdom. True wisdom comes from you. The beginning of wisdom and knowledge for us is we begin to fear you, bow before you, claim you as our God, claim your salvation by faith as a provision for ourselves. Lord, what a blessing it is to enter in to a relationship with you and begin to walk with wisdom through this difficult life. But Lord, a life that you've provided much joy. May we enjoy every day that you've provided. And may we navigate through the days of darkness, never forgetting this life is just a breath. Nothing but a breath. It's temporary, but it's valuable. It's of great importance. We give you praise in Christ's name. Amen.